The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This is the Seahawkers Podcast. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers, and joining me to talk day two of the NFL Combine, Mr. Rob Staton of SeahawksDraftBlog.com. Rob, how you doing?
Really good, Brandon. Another really good day at the Combine. The tight ends and the receivers really showing off the quality of depth that is in this draft. I've got a good feeling about it. I think the Seahawks are probably going to draft a tight end and a receiver at some point in this class based on what we saw today. And it's all positive news. This is starting to look like a really deep draft class at various positions.
Rob, we can no longer refer to it as the Combine. It's now the DK Metcalf Show, sponsored by the NFL Combine, starring DK Metcalf.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be the star. And I don't know if anybody in the defensive line class on Sunday is going to be amazing. And there's a chance that one or two players are going to usurp him for the main headline. But for DK Metcalf to knock Kyler Murray and all the talk of him going number one overall to Arizona off the main headline there and to be the number one trending item on Twitter at various points today is incredible. He had an amazing workout, ran a 4.33 at 228 pounds, has got the kind of athletic profile that is somewhere between Julio Jones and Calvin Johnson. He just looks incredible. He's incredibly impressive. He had this really touching moment after he'd run his 4.33 when he FaceTimed his parents and broke down in tears that they showed on the NFL Network. So just a great day for DK Metcalf. And look, I think every single mock draft that you read after the Combine is going to have him in the top 10. I'm not convinced that he's going to go as high as that, but that's what you're going to be reading for the next few weeks.
Well, even go back when we were first previewing guys and talking about guys that were going to be interested in the Combine, and we were talking about DK Metcalf. You know, he was a guy that we were looking at, you know, possibly being available for the Seahawks when they had to choose, and they did have the health concerns. And you know what? Those health concerns, those are some of the things that we don't find out about what the teams learn in their medical meetings with these players. So, you know, there's been guys, you know, go back to Maurice Hurst last year who fell all the way to the fifth round, you know, a guy who a lot of people were mocking to be in the first round. And then because of medical issues, slips all the way down to the fifth round. And there's no really way to predict that until it just happens.
Yeah, and that's the thing that people have got to remember here is that, look, there is every chance that DK Metcalf will go in the top 10 like a lot of people are going to start projecting. But just think back to Miles Jack a few years ago. This was a guy that had all of the athletic potential that you would want. He got fantastic size, was being touted as a top 10 pick. They found something with a knee injury. And he ended up going in the top of round two. The neck injury is going to be a serious thing for DK Metcalf. If people aren't aware about this, during the 2018 season, he kind of landed awkwardly on his neck. And I think what it was prescribed as is that a bit of the bone broke away. And the end of his season, he went to see specialists. He got an insurance policy against his career ending prematurely. And there was some concern that he may not be able to play again. Now, in Seattle, we're very familiar with players who have suffered neck injuries, you know, with Cliff Averill recently and Cam Chancellor, and it has just wiped them out straight away at the end of their careers. So although Metcalf has been cleared to play football and to cleared to practice and train for the Combine, if the teams look at the neck and say, this is going to hamper the longevity of his career, you know, maybe a year or two down the line, if something triggers the neck again, is it going to be the end for him? Is he going to be a guy that we can rely on for 5-6 years at the very least in terms of a career? Or is he going to be a guy that might be done after a year or two? You know, these are things that teams with the medical information that they've got have got to consider. And that's going to be the issue for DK Metcalf, as on top of the fact that he is not run a particularly deep root tree at Ole Miss. He had a lot of concentration drops, and these are things that people have to consider. But as a pure physical specimen, he is a, you know, he's a top five pick, and we just have to wait and see how teams balance this out. I suspect that somebody in the top 20 may well just go, we're going to take a chance on this guy because of his size and his speed and the fact that he is a very unique player. But if he lasts into a range where the Seahawks can draft him, keep an eye on this guy, because they always take amazing athletes with their first pick, and DK Metcalf is exactly the type of amazing athlete that they love to draft.
Well, we got to see some other amazing athletes, both among the tight ends and the wide receivers. Quarterbacks also working out today. But before we get there, I want to talk about some of the news that kind of kicked off the day. Jason LaCanfora tweeting out before the combine got started, hearing the Seahawks continue to make progress on a long-term deal with Frank Clark ahead of the franchise deadline next week. And this was an interesting piece of news because we saw John Schneider on Wednesday talking to the media and reminding everyone that the Seahawks haven't used the franchise tag since 2010 on Olinda Mare, the kicker, and kind of poking fun at the 49ers a little bit that he talked him into using their franchise tag on Robbie Gould. So D Ford for the Chiefs, the Chiefs announced that they were going to use the franchise tag on him. So with this news, with the fact that the Seahawks haven't announced a franchise tag yet on Clark, with the press conference from John Schneider, it's feeling a little bit like we might be able to expect a contract for Frank Clark here pretty soon.
Yeah, I think actually the franchise tag being, what is it, 17.128. That, you know, that is the figure that we're looking at here. So just over $17 million for a defensive end. Possibly helps the Seahawks a little bit. If it was up towards 18, 19, then would you want to sort of guarantee him that per year over 3 or 4 years? Maybe not. With it being at 17, can you say to him, look, we're going to give you $17.5 million a year for the next 3-4 years, maybe with some incentives there to raise that based on sacks, and you might be able to get a long-term deal done. And I think with the way that the league is going, it certainly seems like a plausible deal that could be made there. Look, Frank Clark is one of the top pass rushers in the league, and he showed that last year. What he needs is a bit of help on the other side. I think if you can get a partner or even a couple of guys to really support him, that he can be a legit number one defensive end. I remember doing a podcast with Kenny a couple of years ago and saying he's got the talent to be one of the best pass rushers in the league. He's got the size, he's got the explosive power, he's got the speed, he's got everything. You know, teams really respect Frank Clark, and I remember sort of hearing all the talk about the Raiders sort of singled him out as the Seahawks' best player, as their key player going into the London game. So I think it's well worth sort of tying him down to the future. I think he proved last year that he warrants that kind of money. It's going to be almost impossible to replace him, especially with only your four picks. So get him tied down. Save yourself the franchise tag this year. More importantly, it's another player that won't be out of contract in a year when Russell Wilson, Bobby Wagner, and Jaron Reed's contracts are coming up. So if they don't get all of those done, they run the risk of losing those players. So the more that you can get signed up now, the easier it's going to make life to keep your core together. I think this is amazing news if Frank Clark is coming close to an agreement, and hopefully, fingers crossed, that is going to happen in maybe in the next few days.
Well, and this time last year, you know, we were looking at Frank Clark saying, okay, now that Michael Bennett's gone, Cliff Averill had to, you know, retire due to injury, this is going to be the year where we really see if Frank Clark can handle a full-time load and still continue to produce. And he absolutely showed that, you know, 13 sacks, a career high, you know, 3 forced fumbles on the season, a career high. Quarterback hits was also a career high. So he lost two of those people who, you know, the surrounding players that allowed him to kind of grow into the player that he is. And he continued to produce. And even, you know, we saw some additional production from Jaron Reed. So if they can get a deal done with him, that'll be big news for the Seahawks. They won't have to use the franchise tag. I know some of us think it would be kind of fun to use the franchise tag on Earl, but that won't happen. And other reports coming out that he's looking for in the range of $13 million. And certainly the Seahawks aren't going to pay that.
No, and you know, Frank, the thing with Frank is that Frank's not a game wrecker. Frank's not J.J. Watt. He's not Von Miller. He's not Aaron Donald. You know, he's not that type of player, but he's probably on the next level down, which is, you know, your DeMarcus Lawrence types. That they can help win you any given game with their ability to rush the edge. And you can, like, if you're going to be a team that's competing, you need at least one guy like this. I think the key this offseason, especially with this draft class, with it being so strong defensively, is to go and get some other pieces. And with free agency being relatively strong, less so since Brandon Graham signed and Dee Ford's off the market. Hopefully Frank Clark will be. I think we all expect that. You know, that's going to hit the market a little bit, but there are some good defensive line options there and pass rushing options in free agency. So you can go and support him. That has to be the key. As for Earl, the franchise tag is $11.15 million. It would be, I think that we could all agree that Earl Thomas's career is probably done in Seattle. Or the way that Pete Carroll talked about KJ Wright, for example, which was, we'd love to have him back. We desperately want to have him back. We think he's an amazing player. We don't know if we'll be able to get it done, but we love him and we want to keep him, was kind of like the sentiment from Pete Carroll on KJ. And when anybody asked them about Earl Thomas and they said if he spoke to Earl Thomas, he just went, no. So which kind of suggests that the tone there made it pretty clear that Earl Thomas's days in Seattle were done. I'd love to have a situation where they've franchised him and were able to turn that into like a third round pick, for example, from Dallas or somebody, in order to get something from him. But I think that time has gone. They probably should have traded him when they had the opportunity during the season or before the season a year ago. They didn't do it. They're going to miss out. And who knows whether they'll get a third round comp pick next year.
Other piece of news for the Seahawks, Ian Rappaport tweeting that the Seahawks will officially release Malik McDowell. I thought we had done that before the season started, but apparently he stuck around and now he's going to be going elsewhere. And a little bit of confusion among some people because the Rappaport tweet also said that Malik McDowell would like to play, but it's not going to be for Seattle. And who knows what those health concerns are showing to where if there's even going to be another team who would be willing to take a risk there.
Yeah, I thought he'd been released as well. And then then Pete Carroll or John Schneider, John Schneider was asked about it by one of the reporters during his press conference. And I was like, oh, right, is he still with the Seahawks? Like, I thought he'd gone. And then, you know, John said, I can't talk about it. And then we've got this piece of news here. And I was sort of like, I thought this was all kind of, we'd all moved on from this, but clearly not. But he's going to move on. I just think it's a real shame.
Yeah.
I think it's a shame for two reasons. Malik McDowell, you know, clearly there was a reason why he fell from a likely top 10 pick, and he is a top 10 physical talent all the way into the second round. And that's because of the attitude and the effort and the personality. And, you know, a lot of teams probably didn't even have him on their draft board as a consequence. But in terms of sheer potential, he was a Calais Campbell level prospect. You know, that's what you were hoping he would turn into. Amazing length, amazing power, his ability to play nose tackle at 295 pounds and play end. He could bull rush guys with one arm. You know, it was just an incredible physical talent. And just imagine how good that would have looked to have Jaron Reed and Malik McDowell and Frank Clark on that defensive line. We'd be looking at this future of the Seahawks in a completely different way just by having that one extra guy in there. And on top of the fact that Malik McDowell obviously had to retire, they then go and spend the second round pick on Sheldon Richardson because they felt like, look, we're going for it, we're being aggressive, we need to go and replace McDowell now. So they go and then spend the second round pick on Sheldon Richardson. So that's two, because he only lasts a year. So essentially this whole situation of drafting McDowell and then having to replace him cost the Seahawks two second round picks. That's two players that they could have potentially had on the roster right now contributing and making a difference. And that is significant. You know, it has to go down as one of the biggest mistakes that they've made to draft him. And look, they couldn't have predicted what was going to happen. But, you know, I think sometimes with the way that he fell and you know, there's sort of a buyer beware situation with him in the first place. And it's not worked out for the Seahawks. And it's a massive shame, but one that we draw a line under now, and let's just see if anybody else gives Malik McDowell an opportunity to continue his football career.
Well, let's get into the wide receivers and their workouts from today. And one of the things that we talked about, Rob, in the combine preview was the Seahawks like to look for wide receivers who run in the 4.4s. And we actually had a slew of receivers who ran in the 4.3s. You had Paris Campbell from Ohio State, Andy Isabella from Massachusetts, Mecole Hardman from Georgia, DK Metcalf from Mississippi, who we talked about, Terry McLaurin from Ohio State, and Emmanuel Hall from Missouri, Darius Slayton from Auburn, all those guys running in the 4.3s. And you know, four of those five guys were on your watch list of guys that the Seahawks should watch for.
Yeah, it is really, really cool to sort of see that come off and sort of, there was 18 guys who ran a 4.4 or faster. There were three guys who just missed out. I mean, the Seahawks did draft a 4.50 runner in round four. So Jamal Custis and BC Johnson and then Keel Harry just missed out on cracking the 4.4. So you're looking at, you know, about 20 guys from the combine alone. And then you take into account the other guys who would have run even faster than some of these guys who weren't invited. Penny Hart, for example, who had a great Senior Bowl, was not invited to the combine, which is a bit of a surprise, and could have run in the 4.3s as well. So there are other guys. Preston Williams, who was not allowed to work out from Colorado State, may well have run in the 4.4s. So there's a real deep class of receivers that the Seahawks could consider here, and all types as well, Brad. And that's the great thing. You've kind of got the guys who are expected to go early. So if the Seahawks trade down from 21, as we expect, they could trade down into a range where Paris Campbell, for example, who was the fastest receiver, is available, or Terry McLaurin, or Deebo Samuel, or AJ Brown. They could trade down into a range where those players fit. If they want to go in the middle rounds, you know, Emmanuel Hall or Hakeem Butler or people like that could be available in the middle rounds. And then later on, you've got your kind of later round prospects, Jalen Smith, who had a bad Senior Bowl, bad 2018 season, but has got some athletic potential there. You've got Dylan Mitchell, you've got Jazz Ferguson, you've got Gary Jennings, you've got Miles Boykin. So at any point, if they find a range where they think that's where we're going to take a receiver, whether it's early, middle, later rounds, they're going to be able to do it. So I think that based on what we saw today, I think it's very, very likely that the Seahawks will add a receiver and a tight end at some point. The options are too good and there's too much depth there for them not to go in that direction. A quick other couple of other points, because there are some very interesting things about this class. Miles Boykin and Emmanuel Hall jumped the second best vertical in recorded history today, 43.5 inches. That's at any position. So those are incredible numbers there, even beating DK Metcalf's amazing 4.5-inch vertical. Boykin and Hall also topped the broad jump rankings with an 11.8 and an 11.9 respectively. So those two players in particular, not just fast, but incredibly explosive as well. Why does that matter? Helps you go up and get the ball in jump ball situations, compete for the football. So I think those players, along with the Paris Campbells, along with the Terry McLaurins, along with the DK Metcalfs and people like that, they're the guys that I'm going to go back and have another look at after the combine. But just a great, deep wide receiver class on the whole.
Well, and some of those guys with the strength, too. You had DK Metcalf and N'Keal Harry, both with 27 reps on the bench press. Terry McLaurin, 18 reps on a bench press for a receiver. You know, that's nothing to turn away from. So a lot of those guys even performing well athletically on the bench as well.
Yeah, I will say this about the drills, though. There were some disappointing performances in the drills. Hakeem Butler is very popular amongst people who follow college football in the draft because he made some amazing plays in 2018, had amazing production for Iowa State, and is big, fast, explosive, and a really interesting physical profile. He's gone through some adversity, so he's kind of got that character fit that the Seahawks like as well. But he has a lot of drops on tape. He struggles to separate. When I was watching him go through the drills today, his body language was terrible. There was one in particular where they were sort of like the first deep route. And what you have to do is the quarterback will throw the ball up in the air. You have to track it over your shoulder and then make the catch. Now, the quarterbacks were varying quality. So if Drew Locke was throwing the ball, for example, with his strong arm, that probably would have been a perfect throw. And Butler could have just run underneath the ball and caught it. But what you actually find is that a lot of the quarterbacks can't throw the deep ball particularly well. And in this particular rep, what happened is the ball floated in the air, it hung in the air, and it dropped behind Hakeem Butler. Now, what he's supposed to do in that situation, he's not just jog downfield and go, where's my football, which is what he did. He's supposed to track the ball in the air, make an adjustment, and then make the catch. You still want to see that because that's what you'd want to see in the game. And that's what other players were doing. So if it was underthrown, they would check their run, go back and get the ball, or wait for the ball, catch it. Look, it's not a great rep because the quarterback's let you down, but you've still caught the ball, you've still finished the rep, and you've done it, and the coaches will applaud you for that. What Butler did is he kind of just ran, jogged down, and then didn't even look for the football. It bounced about 5 yards behind him, and then the coach went, what are you doing? And he kind of just sort of held his arms up in the air and went, what? And it's like, you've got to actually go and get the football. You don't just give up on a pass because it was underthrown. We don't want to see that at the next level. And that kind of encapsulated how he went through some of the workouts today. So that was a little bit disappointing. N'Keal Harry had a few drops as well. And, you know, these are guys who tested very, very well. But, you know, the drills, they were left a little bit wanting there. But on the plus side, I thought Paris Campbell and Terry McLaurin were excellent, and some of the other receivers as well, very, very good. So a bit of a mixed bag in terms of the drills, but in terms of the athletic profile, very, very good.
Well, if the Seahawks are going to go for a receiver with size and speed, it definitely seems like the year to do it. I only hope that they will consider guys like Harry from Arizona State, because he was outside of the 4-4 range that they look for. On the broadcast, they brought up that, you know, there's been several guys in the past that have run in the 4-5s that are bigger guys that have, you know, still gone in the first round. I'm thinking of the receiver out of the Thomas from New Orleans.
He ran a 4.57, yeah.
Yeah. And so you'd hate for the Seahawks to miss out on a big receiver like Michael Thomas just for a 40 time, you know, who is a solid receiver. So, but Harry, you know, 6'4", 213 pounds. Arcega Whiteside, who we didn't get to see run today. Do we know what happened with him? You know, 6'3", 225 guy?
Not heard a whisper about anything to do with that. There was no sort of intel going into the combine that he wasn't going to work out, but then he just wasn't there. I thought that because he has a double-barreled name, that I thought that he was just going to work out in the second group with Whiteside rather than the first group with Arcega alphabetically. But then he just didn't appear in either of the groups. So unless he just missed his flight, I'm not sure what the issue is there. Maybe he's nursing a small injury. Perhaps he doesn't feel particularly confident that he's going to run fast and therefore wanted to wait until his pro day. Perhaps there's a more favorable environment at Stanford's pro day. I'm not too sure, but that was disappointing not to see him. I think you're right. You know, it will be disappointing to see the Seahawks miss out on a real quality wide receiver for the sake of, you know, a few tenths of a second. I mean, N'Keal Harry ran a 4.53. You know, you're not going to take him off your board because he hasn't run a 4.49, for example.
Right.
But one of the things we have to look for is separation does matter. And with the Seahawks, you know, you look at the receivers that they've drafted and the ones that have succeeded. So Golden Tate, a smaller, quicker receiver, ran a 4.42. Paul Richardson, smaller, quicker, ran a 4.40. Tyler Lockett ran a 4.40. You know, they've had a lot of success with guys like that. David Moore running a 4.42 has been inconsistent, but it has shown some quality there. And you think of some of the receivers that haven't worked out for them. You know, Chris Harper, a bit bigger, 4.50. Kenny Lawler was a seventh round pick, hard to sort of lump in with these. But then you've got Kevin Norwood running the late 4.4s, was a bit bigger. Chris Durham, late 4.4s, a bit bigger. Amara Darbo, a little bit bigger, 4.45. And it hasn't worked quite as well for that. And I just wonder whether or not, because of Russell Wilson, you know, he's a very conservative quarterback. He's not going to throw the jump balls like some other quarterbacks do and take as many chances unless he absolutely has to. And Doug Baldwin and Tyler Lockett and Paul Richardson and Golden Tate were very good at getting open, getting downfield. And that's just the style that the Seahawks use. They, you know, Pete Carroll's a conservative head coach and wants his offense to be conservative. They want to take deep shots. They want to run the ball. He's not going to be making his receivers battle for contested catches 6 yards downfield or anything like that. So from this group, what I'm going to kind of focus on is, yeah, do you know what? I think they'll take a bigger receiver and will want to take bigger receivers, but they still better run in the 4-4s because Wilson almost needs that separation. This offense needs that separation, and they need to be able to get downfield because that's what the Seahawks do. They're kind of like a run and gun style offense. And, you know, David Moore's bigger, but he makes plays down the field as we saw in Carolina last year. That's what they want from their wide receivers. So the Seahawks type requires some degree of top-end speed.
And they can make up for some of that speed with having, you know, solid route running. You know, it doesn't have to just be speed. And, you know, you mentioned Hakeem Butler, the critical component for a wide receiver is being able to catch the ball. So it would, you know, he has does have the nice size. He's 6'6". You know, he has the stats from his last year in college, 1,300 yards on only 60 catches. You know, that's 22 yards per catch. It's, you know, really impressive numbers for the receiver out of Iowa State. So if you're putting him up against a guy like Terry McLaurin, who he's only 6'1", but when you watch the drills, you see him being able to catch the ball so much better than Butler.
It's mainly about the release more than anything. It's that, you know, you get into your stem and, you know, more often than not, you kind of your initial footwork and your first few steps are to set the defensive back up to try and make your break to get open. And if you are creating separation and you are getting that window for a quarterback, it makes life easier for you as a receiver to catch the football because you've not got somebody draped all over you in college. And that's the problem that some players like Butler suffer from. One of the main reasons why he's had a few drops in college is because nearly everything's contested. Nearly everything's a battle. and there are very few clean catches to be had because he's having to fight with the defensive back to get the ball, and that's going to be even harder at the next level. And you've, I mean, look, Terry McLaurin had a few drops in college, but some of the players, like Paris Campbell's a good example of that. I mean, he's a 4.31 runner with running back size. He's like 210 pounds and ran a 4.31. Not enough people are talking about Paris Campbell, by the way. You know, everyone's talking about DK Metcalf.
Yeah.
Campbell's at his 2.8, 208, 210, has jumped an amazing vertical 40 inches, has run a 4.31, the fastest time amongst receivers. I mean, that DK Metcalf, amazing, but Paris Campbell deserves some credit as well. And what he does really well, gets downfield, gets open on the short route, great release, fantastic catching technique, presents that his hands to the ball, has got that ability to be that modern-day NFL player. He can take sweeps. He can run from the backfield. He can take screens. He's like Percy Harvin. I said this before, that he's like a... Harvin was more sudden. You know, Harvin was slighter and weighed less. But they share some... I mean, he's faster than Harvin in terms of the 40. I mean, yeah. He's much faster than Percy Harvin ran a time. He doesn't seem quite as sudden when you see him on the field. But he's that type of Harvin player. And, you know, if I'm the Rams, you know, they can never have enough of these guys who are going to be running sort of jet sweeps and moving all over the place and getting downfield. For me, Campbell should be an option for the Seahawks if they trade down, because he's a multifaceted weapon that maybe can open up the offense a little bit, but he can still do the things that the Seahawks want to do, which is to get downfield, get open, and present Russell Wilson with clean windows.
And that's the thing that's just blowing me away, Rob, when I look at some of these draft projections going into the combine. You know, a guy like Paris Campbell's projected toward the end of the second round, early third round.
Yeah, I mean, I've long thought that he should be, you know, like a top 50 lock, and I've mocked him at the end of the first round, and I think even sort of in the early 20s in the first round, because I just think he's a real quality player, great character as well. You know, there are no flags with this guy. You know, he ticks every single box: athleticism, size, catching technique, personality. Was a track athlete. I just think everything about him is he produced great production as well. I think that Paris Campbell is a top player, and look, I think if you draft him, you're going to find a way to use him. I think he's better than Curtis Samuel, who the Panthers took in the second round, I think it was, a couple of years ago, and it's taken him a bit of time to adjust to the next level. I think that Paris Campbell can be a big time weapon in the NFL, and I think with him and McLaurin, and they're two players that I think, if the Seahawks want to take another weapon with their first pick after trading down, then they should be options. But the thing is that here's the other thing you have to consider. There is so much depth at this receiving class that do you want to go in that direction with your first pick, when maybe there might be a defensive lineman that you could take, or even an offensive lineman, someone like Chris Lindstrom, who was great yesterday. If you have to replace J.R. Sweezy, for example, that's a perfect fit. If you want to add another pass rusher to complement Frank Clark and help elevate your defense, if you want to take a linebacker to fill a hole, if K.J. Wright leaves in free agency, do you want to take that receiver with the first pick and push those other needs later on, or do you want to use this receiver class to your advantage and wait till the later rounds? That's the luxury you've got with the Seahawks this year. It's probably one of the reasons why Pete Carroll hasn't specifically identified, we have a need here, because I think that what they're going to do is they're going to let the draft come to them. And if the best pick is a defensive player with their first pick, they'll go there. If it's O-line, they'll go there. If it's receiver, they'll go there. I think it's wide open. And the great thing is when they get to rounds 3, 4, 5, they'll still be able to get players at other positions who are probably, they feel as excited about as the guy that took the first pick, because it seems to be that kind of draft class.
Well, I have a feeling that Campbell's probably going to be shooting up some draft boards of people who are projecting him toward the second and third rounds after a day like today. Now, moving over to tight ends, there were some impressive athletes. Noah Fant, TJ Hawkinson. Rob, could we have a 2 Fant tight end set for the Seahawks? How would that look?
Oh, well, it'd be interesting, wouldn't it? You know, we've already got the Griffin twins. So why not have, and there's the two Dixons, and why not have a pair of Fants?
Why not?
As well, you know, is that the correct term for a grouping of Fants? Is it a pair of Fants? You know, duo of Fants. But look, I think with Noah Fant, there are a few things here. Like he was always expected to have an amazing workout. He was listed on the Bruce Feldman freaks list, which he brings out in the summer every single year, highlighting the most athletic players in college football. And Noah Fant was on that this year. So everybody kind of knew what kind of an athlete he was and expected he was going to have an amazing workout. And he's achieved that. And congratulations to him for that. But it shouldn't be lost, some of the issues that were there with Noah Fant. So he allowed TJ Hawkinson, he was meant to be the guy at Iowa this year, and he allowed TJ Hawkinson to become the guy. TJ Hawkinson is by far the better player. He's a more rounded tight end. He's not as athletic, but he wasn't a million miles behind in the vertical and the broad and the agility testing. It's kind of just the 40 where there was a bit of a difference there. Mike Jezicki a year ago ran a very similar time to Noah Fant and did very well in the vertical and the agility testing as well. And everybody said he was going to go in the first round. And Mike Jezicki went where he should have gone, which was the second round, and he went to the Dolphins in the NFC. So I think that Fant's stock hasn't really improved because he did what he was expected to do today. Mm. For the Seahawks, I think he's a little bit too much of a pass-catching, big slot receiver type, you know, the kind that they struggled badly to use correctly when they had Jimmy Graham in Seattle. And I think that the change they've gone with now to go with more blocking tight ends, and even Pete Carroll talking this week about George Fant almost becoming a permanent tight end, that's his role now. He's kind of a swing sixth offensive lineman / tight end, and that's how they view him. I just think if they're going to add another tight end this year, it's probably going to be another blocker. It's going to be another one that fits their identity. It's going to be another Will Disley Y tight end type, as opposed to a big athletic pass catcher like Noah Fant.
Well, and I think that makes a lot of sense, too, just based off of what we saw with Jimmy Graham and how that kind of failed for the team. You know, he never really lived up to the expectations that I think we had for him. And that was just the way that they, you know, he just didn't fit the way that the Seahawks plan to use a tight end. And we saw last year that probably Will Disley is more that guy, and maybe even George Fant's more that guy, because they want their tight ends to be blocking and not necessarily catching passes. Although, you know, we did see it from time to time with Luke Wilson and, you know, having a guy who's a speedster. But Wilson was also, you know, he wasn't terrible on the blocking end either. So it would be curious to me if they went tight end in early on in the draft. It seems more of somewhere where they could look toward the middle of the rounds. But like you said, the depth at tight end means that they could grab somebody toward the middle rounds and still get someone who of talent.
Yeah, I think the Jimmy Graham experiment has probably left a few scars there, because I just wonder. I mean, let's just sort of take it to be that one, to rehash everything over again. Go back to when they traded for him. It was weeks after that Super Bowl loss. And all of a sudden you get dangled in front of you an opportunity to trade for the best red zone target in the NFL a few weeks after you've lost a Super Bowl because of your inability to finish in the red zone. And then you bring him in and you've got this amazing athletic talent who's caught a bajillion touchdowns and amazing stats at New Orleans, and you decide to try and turn him because you believe in your ability to coach guys up and adapt and bring them into your scheme. You decide to change him into a complete tight end. So you don't use him the way that New Orleans used him. You start trying to ask him to block. You want him to be Tony Gonzalez instead of being Jimmy Graham. And it just didn't work. And then in the final year, you just end up resorting to using him as a red zone threat, which was nice. And he got, what was it, 10 touchdowns. But by then, the horse had bolted a little bit, and you kind of wasted that. And I think from that, they probably learned a lesson and thought, our kind of guy is a Zach Miller guy. You know, that's our kind of tight end. It's a guy with no pressure to throw him the ball. If he gets two catches in a game, you're not going to have a million articles written or tweets posted right after the game saying, why didn't they target this guy? We've brought him in. It's that kind of blocker, blue collar, normal, orthodox tight end, the Will Disley type, that will get the job done for them. And it suits them because they're a run-centric team. And the good thing about this draft, again, you know, when talked about with the receivers, you've got big, you've got small, you've got guys who can go early, middle, late round. Same with the tight ends. You've got your blocking tight ends. You've got your joker tight ends. You've got your wide tight ends. You've got guys who do a little bit of both. You've got guys like Trevon Wesco who may play a little bit of fullback as well as playing tight end, you know, that kind of H-back type. So, you know, there's a ton of options here, and you could get a guy early. You know, TJ Hawkinson's probably going to go in the top 10. I think Fan and Irv Smith Jr. are probably going to go somewhere between 20 and 40. I think we may see Caden Smith go a little bit earlier than people think. His agility testing was really, really good, and he's kind of like that Zach Ertz type. And there are guys that are going to be available in the middle rounds, like your Jay Sternbergers. You've got Drew Sample is probably going to go in round 3-4, that kind of range. Dawson Knox had a really good day today from Ole Miss. And then later on, you've got your West Coast, you've got Elise Mack, you've got a Caleb Wilson, you've got Isaac Nauta, Kendall Blanton, Josh Oliver's going to probably go in the middle rounds. So there are a million names out there. None of them are Jimmy Graham, apart from potentially Noah Fant. But there's just real quality of depth available. And I'll be very, very surprised if the Seahawks don't take a tight end at some point.
One of the guys that you pointed out in your blog was LSU's Foster Moreau. And you talk about him wearing the number 18 jersey for the Tigers. Why is that significant?
This is the jersey that it's voted on by the players at the start of the season. And there was a very famous player, I think Jacob Hester, back in the day, wore this jersey. And then to sort of commemorate his approach to football on and off the field, the number 18 is given to the player who best encapsulates that spirit every single year. In the past, White, the cornerback who went to Buffalo, and they drafted him in the Tre'Davious White in the first round a couple of years ago. He wore number 18 for a couple of years, and it's a big honor. You know, if you are the one who gets to wear this, you're basically the team is saying you're a high character player, and he wore that. So it's a big thing for him. I've not personally watched any of his tape, and he's one of the first players that I'm going to go and watch. And some people have said they've already watched him and that they find him a little bit pedestrian and there isn't too much to get excited about. I'm not too bothered about that. You know, LSU's had a terrible offense for quite a few years now, in particular in the passing game. And I suspect that Foster Moreau, with his physical skill set, is a player that you bring in to develop and work on. Now, listen to some of these numbers. This is pretty special in what he was able to do today. So he's 6'4", he's 253 pounds, so that's ideal size. He's got 33.5-inch arms, good for blocking, not short arms, an 81.5-inch wingspan, brilliant. He ran a 4.66, that's really quick for a tight end, 36.5-inch vertical, 10.1 broad, had an amazing short shuttle, which was 4.11. I'm trying to just pull it up here. I think it's the fourth best by a tight end at the combine in the last decade.
Wow.
You know, it's absolutely outstanding. His three cone is 7.16. Now, the Seahawks generally have taken tight ends who run anything quicker than a 7.10. I'm not going to rip this guy off and say he's not going to be on Seattle's board, though, because he ran a 7.16 when his short shuttle's so good and everything else about him is so good. He's hard-nosed. He's a blocking tight end. He could act as a fullback as well. I just think that he's a player that I'm desperate to just sort of get the combine out of the way. And then next week, when I go and watch these guys play and go and watch some LSU tape that I've got, I'm going to be watching Foster Moreau and seeing if he is a potential option for the Seahawks, possibly on day three.
Well, Rob, let's move on to the quarterbacks. And like you mentioned at the top of the show, DK Metcalf, he kind of stole the headlines away from Kyler Murray, who at the start of the day, everybody was reporting that everyone around the league is expecting now the Cardinals to take Kyler Murray with the number one pick overall.
Yeah. And I think it'd be the right move. And this is something we've been talking about on the blog for quite some time. I wrote a piece about Kyler Murray on January the 3rd saying, and the title was Arizona should take Kyler Murray with the top pick. And so the argument for it was, look, you're the Cardinals. You're the worst team in the NFL. You've drafted Josh Rosen. He didn't show that much to get excited about a year ago. And for me, Kyler Murray is a better player. Now, you are essentially a rebuilding football team at this point. You've got a new head coach. You are bringing in a load. Anybody who's cut in the NFL these days seems to be winding up in Arizona. You're completely rebuilding the roster. If you believe that Kyler Murray is the best player in this draft and you believe that he's better than Josh Rosen, why wouldn't you take him? I mean, do you want to be building and moving forward with a weaker quarterback? Or, you know, that's the most important position. So why not build around the guy that you actually want to build around? The Cardinals haven't had the number one overall pick for like 30 years. So take the guy that, if you think this guy's the business and you're owning the number one overall pick, then take him. And then people will say, well, you know, they've already paid Josh Rosen $10 million for this year, that they're already committed to that. I'm like, yeah, that's, it's not, ideally you would avoid that. But this is a team that paid Sam Bradford and Mike Glennon, you know, a fortune last year just to not play so they could play Josh Rosen anyway. So the $10 million is neither here nor there. Now, if you'd make this move and you turn around to other teams, I saw Tony Pauline already saying that the Washington Redskins have already reached out to the Cardinals about potentially Josh Rosen being available. If you could get the number 15 pick for Josh Rosen, that's essentially like a 5-pick difference from where you drafted him a year ago, and you get that pick back this year. I mean, all you've kind of done is sort of push that pick forward an extra year. If you can do that, then I think that's a great move. I mean, even if you're looking at teams like the Patriots later in the first round or some other teams who want to draft a young quarterback, I think you seriously consider it and take Kyler Murray with the top pick. Or here's another idea. Keep Kyler Murray and Josh Rosen and let them compete. You know, sure. You're a building franchise. Let them go out there and compete for the job this year. And in a year's time, assess the situation. You know, you can always deal one of them in the future. They're both immensely talented. It's kind of like a new car that, you know, you're not going to drive too much. It's not going to lose its value within a year if it's not playing. So I think that it would be the right thing to do, certainly more than just adding a random defensive player and hoping that you're going to have a much better year. I think it's a vital, vital off-season for the Cardinals. They made a very interesting pick at head coach. Ask him who he wants to be coaching for the next 5 to 10 years. And, you know, if he's going to be the next Sean McVay, which is what they're hoping, ask him who the guy wants to be there to sort of initiate this project. And for me, that's Kyler Murray. He's the best player in the draft, so take him at number one.
It does feel a little bit smokescreeny, just the way that they've been talking it up and it being such a big news item throughout the week. But at the same time, I can understand it. The other thing, though, you know, we talked about height, we talked about weight and hand size with Kyler Murray. One thing that someone pointed out here in the past day is that his wingspan is in the 1st percentile with 69.5 inches and 28.5 inch arms.
It's a good job he's not having to do any blocking.
Right.
that's all I'm going to say about that. I think that with the smokescreen thing, that's what I thought at first. You know, that was my initial reaction, was that this is a great smokescreen. And I think if all this was Steve Keim standing up on a podium and going, Josh Rosen's our quarterback for now, then I would say, yeah, it was a very intelligent smokescreen. But then it almost seems a little bit like, look what's happened in the next 24 hours. The thing's exploded and they're not doing anything to put cold water on it. And it's almost become a chaotic situation now whereby it's got so big, the story, that they could potentially draft Kyler Murray number one overall, at least they're considering it, that it's actually probably having an impact on Josh Rosen's authority in that locker room, because everybody else in the locker room right now is thinking, they don't really believe in this guy. You know, they're seriously considering drafting Kyler Murray. All of those players, every other player on that roster is reading these headlines and seeing this and thinking, what's going on here? They clearly don't think much of Josh Rosen, or they're clearly at least entertaining the idea of taking Kyler Murray. So this can have a major impact there. And also you've got to wonder what's going through Josh Rosen's mind. Because even if you say to him, hey, Josh, don't go on Twitter for the next 2 weeks because we're going to, you know, try and sell the number one overall pick here. You know, this has exploded into such a story now that even he must be sort of second-guessing what's going on, wondering, calling his agent, calling his parents, calling his friends. What are they doing? Are they seriously going to draft a quarterback number one overall? I thought I was their guy. You know, it's become a bigger situation now. Like, listen, I hope that the Cardinals have made a complete dog's dinner at this and are creating huge chaos, which they're not going to be able to survive from. But I just wonder if you're going to go through all of this, then not take Kyler Murray with the top pick, I just, to me, seems a little bit over the top, and like you're playing with fire a little bit. As for his size, it'll be a concern for some teams. That's no question about that. I just think he is absolutely incredible. He is Patrick Mahomes in a 5'10 frame. And I just think, he's easily the best player in this draft class. And if I was the team picking number one overall, I'd be taking this guy unless I already had a legit franchise quarterback.
Well, and if the Cardinals are handling it that way, maybe that is the smart way to handle it, because either Josh Rosen can take it or he can't. And if he can't take it, you're going to know by draft time. And if he thinks that this is such a challenge to him mentally that he's not going to be able to deal with it, that he's calling his agent, well, then you take the number one pick overall with Murray, and then you either deal him or you make him compete and see what he has.
If I'm the Cardinals, I'm thinking this. Who are the Seahawks and the Rams and the 49ers most looking forward to playing twice next season? Is it Josh Rosen or is it Kyler Murray?
Yeah.
And I want no point. I do not want to see Kyler Murray in CenturyLink Field or in whatever they call that stadium now in Arizona. I don't want to see that. I don't want any part of that. I'll take Josh Rosen twice a year and move on with that, because I just think Kyler Murray is an exciting player. And Rosen, good passer, probably the most natural thrower of a football in the draft last year. But there's always been question marks about his ability to stay healthy, about his personality, about his ability to be the guy in the locker room. And, perhaps you're right. Perhaps they're finding out a lot about Josh Rosen right now and the way that he's maybe handling this behind the scenes. Maybe it's a test for him.
Any other quarterbacks that you want to talk about before we get on out of here, Rob?
Well, it's very difficult to judge the quarterbacks. It's been a little bit of a frustrating day. I don't know if we mentioned this on the podcast yesterday, but for the first year since I can remember, the NFL has not offered a continuous live stream on the website. So what used to happen is if you watched on the NFL Network, you would watch it with all the ad breaks and stuff like that, and all of the crazy banter that was going on between Rich Eisen and Mike Mayock and all the guys down on the field. But if you wanted to just watch the whole thing without any interruptions and see every drill and get analysis and see every 40 and be able to do that, then you could do it online. And this year, for some reason, they've got rid of the continuous feed, and it is just the only option is to watch on the NFL Network. So there was with the second group of quarterbacks in particular, as soon as the Dwayne Haskins, Drew Lock group had gone, the NFL Network just turned it into a bit of an entertainment show. So it was more adverts. Rich Eisen was doing a piece for taking the mickey out of Kurt Warner for something he'd done on his podcast. There was a million anecdotes from Daniel Jeremiah. Can't go 2 minutes without telling an anecdote or a story or referencing someone he's spoken to. And that's what it descended to. And it was very difficult to sort of scout the quarterbacks to the receivers as a consequence. With the first group, the camera angle was always behind the quarterback, which is perfect when you're watching all 22 and you can watch the defense that the quarterbacks are facing. You can see them go through their progressions, see whether they make solid decisions or not. But when they're just in shorts and a t-shirt and they're throwing downfield, you actually don't get any perspective on depth and velocity. You're actually going to want to see it from the TV broadcast viewpoint. So again, very difficult to watch it. I think the quarterbacks that, from what I could fathom, Drew Lock's got a very strong arm, Jared Stidham's got a very strong arm, and Dwayne Haskins can fling it around. It looked a little bit to me like Haskins was going through the motions a little bit. He kind of wanted to see a bit more fire from him, and he didn't really show that. I thought that Will Greer looked pretty good overall, and I think he's going to go a bit earlier than people perhaps think. It would have been nice to see Kyler Murray out there throwing, though, and it's a real shame that he didn't do anything today.
Well, he will have his pro day coming up for sure. And Rob, I really want to thank you for coming back on for day two. If people want to support what you're doing, they can go to patreon.com/SeahawksDraftBlog. Check out your website, SeahawksDraftBlog.com. Follow you on Twitter at Rob Staten. And of course, you can support the Seahawkers podcast at GetInTheFlock.com. Rob, thanks again.
Thanks, Brandon. Looking forward to tomorrow as well. It's the big day with the defensive line class, so it should be a good one.
Before Shopify, were you wondering, where are my sales at? Now you're selling with Shopify, the global commerce platform supercharging your selling. You have no problem selling online, in person, on social media, and beyond. Gary, easy on the cha-ching.
but my Shopify sales are through the roof.
Start selling with Shopify today and discover how millions of businesses around the world use Shopify to ignite their selling. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen. Shopify.com/listen.